And we are live
again.
Will things go well today? I don't know. But if they don't, I'm going to tap out. I'm giving it a shot. I'm coming back around. I created a new episode. Aaron says, I hate to see you this stressed. Relax, Aaron. It's okay. There was a little bit of hamming that up. But yeah, I am a little bit on. I do need a freaking break for damn sure. We'll see how it goes. And I need you guys to be honest with me, right? If I start max headrooming it out again, seriously, don't lie to me like Maurice right here. I have my own image over here on the other screen. I can see it. It ain't a bandwidth issue. For those that are on the audio going, what the hell is this all about? You didn't get to hear the Jack Spirico mental shutdown because, of course, shit has to go wrong the day before I'm gone for vacation. Of course it does. So we're going to start completely from scratch, okay? Let's see how it goes. And let's see, does Jack tweak out again? Or do we get a normal episode? We will see. Technology will be dependent on this. Don't lie to me, guys. I can see myself. I'll know if it's screwed up again. It's as smooth as butter now. We will see. All right, so what do we got today? It's a Monday, and since I'm leaving for vacation, I wanted to leave you guys with the kind of show you seem to like the best, which is when we talk about blood and guts, you know, fire and brimstone, current events and all that. And somebody wrote me and said, hey, look, don't see this as doing alternative news. See it for what we see it for. We tune in to hear what you think about what's going on and what it means is going to come next because you seem pretty good at that. And as I was saying before, we were so rudely interrupted by shitty technology earlier. I do think that I tend to bat about 800 to 850 on my predictions. I get some wrong, but I get a hell of a lot more right than my experts seem to do. So what are we going to talk about today? Well, I'll do a quick reminder for you guys about the AI course and the workshop. And I'm going to tell you some of the people that will be appearing at the workshop, and it might just blow you away. Then we're going to talk about a not so new idea for energy. How about something that can compete with photovoltaic solar and actually beat it on cost and performance? Does it beat it on cost? Yes, if you want batteries and you want always on demand power. Does it beat it on performance? We don't know yet, but this is a cool idea. Imagine a way to produce electricity by the megawatt. We're not talking about, you know, a little bitty windmill on your roof or something. This is probably not something for a homestead. I think the cost would be way too excessive, but it might be for like a community size power generation technology. It fits in a 40-foot shipping container. It has nothing to do with solar the way you're thinking anyway. It stores energy. The entire thing sort of is a battery, but there's no battery in it to wear out or run down. And if you need more, you just bring another one in next to it, plug them together in a daisy chain all the way. You can put two of these, 200, 2000 or more, and we'll see, because there has been a lot of vaporware in this space over time, but this seems to work and it vets out with the physical science and the numbers do seem to make sense. It's a little bit more expensive than solar photovoltaic, but if you want photovoltaic plus batteries, it's dirt cheap compared to that. And it has that modular, bring it in, plug it in, scale it up capability. Might also be a real interesting use case for things like data centers or even Bitcoin mining. Just saying, because you could set it up anywhere. No transmission distances, no problems. Next, Cracker Barrel. Lots of talk about that over the weekend. We're not going to rehash it all here. I want to actually explain to some people in this audience that I can tell from my conversation on social media, you don't get it. You don't know why people are pissed off. You might even be anti-woke yourself, but you don't get it. You don't understand what's upsetting people. It's not the logo. The logo is the straw on the camel's back that is the last straw. The logo change is what made a lot of people that weren't paying attention aware of what was happening underneath the hood. And people are pissed, and rightly so. And there's something more to this than just another woke idiot. This is about erasing culture in a way that we're not really familiar with because nobody seems to value this kind of culture anymore. It's the culture of a grandparent explaining to a grandchild what life used to be like. That's what Cracker Barrel really is for the people that love it. It's not just a place to eat. We can eat anywhere. Now, I'll also tell you some of the problems Cracker Barrel's had that started them on this quest to try to figure out how to adapt to the modern world. Don't adopt to the modern world. Bring back the quality of the food you had 10 years ago. have better service. Maybe if you want to spend some money on your locations, punch out a wall and make your little store a little bit bigger so there's easier movement around. That's how to fix it, not this woke nonsense. But yet another 40-something white woman in glasses has decided to save the day of a company whose product, I guarantee you, she has never once chosen to consume on purpose, ever, ever. Lots of that going around. Then the left seems awfully quiet. Orange Man did something fascist. A lot of people are calling it socialist. It's not socialist. It's socialist in that fascism is a flavor of socialism. But let's call it what it is. It's fascist. It's taking over Intel. But I have a totally different take on this. Could what Orange Man just did, not the way he did it, could it be applied in the future to protect America from corporate bailouts in a way that actually would make sense? There's a lot to unwind there, and I don't know that I trust the government to do it, but I would still say it could be done. But it's funny, the left is like, Orange Man bad, Orange Man Hitler, Orange Man fascist, does an actual fascist thing. The left has by and large kept their mouth shut, and the champion of the left, the old man champion of the left, the guy that supposedly is more popular than the Pope now, right? Bernie Sanders loves what Trump's doing with Intel. United States taking a 10% stake in Intel. Next up, Trump's EO. More fascism. Not really. Outlawing, banning the flag. EOs can't do that. This is one of those ones I went, is he just being stupid again? And when I dug into it, I completely disagree with it, by the way. But he's not being as stupid as it sounds. No, it's not going to be thrown out by the court because nothing he's doing is actually unconstitutional. The premise is unconstitutional, but the action isn't. And he's actually begging Congress to do something that would be then unconstitutional on maybe the merit that if Congress does it, the Supreme Court would let it slide. Congress isn't going to do it. It isn't going to go happen. This is another example of the really hot chick with low cleavage on the dress standing next to the magician. In other words, whenever they gin up my flag, what are they trying to distract you from? In this case, all the shit we're talking about today and more. This is just another Bread and Circus's maneuver, but it ain't what it looks like. And you can chill out. Your best friend won't go to jail for burning a flag next week. It's not going to happen. Germany's throwing in the towel on socialism. Wouldn't if socialism is good, except that it isn't. Germany has realized something. They didn't heed the warning from Margaret Thatcher in the 1980s, but the warning is still here, and it doesn't care if you believe in it or not. You eventually run out of other people's money, so we'll talk about that a little bit, just a short one. Zelensky is doing all he can to avoid peace or even peace talks. In fact, my view is that Zelensky is delusional. So Russia came to the Orange Man's table. Putin walked into Alaska, and they said, hey, we can come up with a deal. We'll give on the security guarantees. So in other words, Russia's given something here. Russia's holding an area that's pretty massive, actually, compared to what they want, which I've said from the beginning. They have a huge swath, like a crescent, that goes all the way and adjoins Crimea, which is Russia, by the way. Somebody should inform Vladimir the map's been updated since 2014. And Russia wants Donetsk and Luhansk. And I'm probably saying those wrong, best I can do. And that represents about one third of the Ukrainian territory Russia currently occupies and fully controls. One third. But they don't have quite all of those two provinces. So they're like, he'll tell you what, we'll give you all of this land back and we'll take these two little slivers, attach them. These people have already voted. They want to be part of Russia. We go our way, you go your way, and you get your security guarantees. Zelensky? No. We're not giving up one inch. Bitch, you already gave up freaking, what, 15% of your country by force? But you gave it up. Like, you don't control it. You don't have it. This is a chance for you to get, like, 10% of that 15% and only lose 5. But no, he wants to fight on, and he wants Crimea back, too. Even the most delusional John Bolton fan doesn't believe that. Oh, yeah, Bolton got raided. Maybe I'll remember to talk about that when I talk about Zelensky here, but I left it out of the notes. But yeah, I want to say a little bit about the John Bolton thing. If I forget, any of you guys that stick with me that long, if I don't tweak out again or something, right? Remind me when I get to the Zelensky thing if I haven't covered it by then. Then we're going to talk about AI a bit. I want to tell you about two things you probably haven't thought about with AI. One is what I, and I don't know if it's the right term for it, the AI task timeline. This is being tracked. I heard about it in a podcast today. It's been being tracked, but I can't find the place to track it, where the statistic is. But it's an interesting idea. How long will it take a human to do this that AI can do almost instantly, right? You give AI 5 minutes to do something, and how long would it take humans to do that? Apparently, this number's going exponential, with the upward number being how many hours of human labor can be replaced in a few moments by AI. This is an interesting thing to track. But then there's something else I've heard nobody really talk about here. We're doing it all over again. Those of you who, like, if I told you, if I said, name three songs by Bachman Turner Overdrive, you would actually have a high potential to be able to name at least two of three. And if I said, you know, taking care of business doesn't count, you could still maybe pull it off, right? You've been around that long, or even less, you know, at least if you would know what Motley Crue was really all about in the 80s, you might remember this thing called the search wars. Remember, there was, you know, Google. Who do you search today? Well, Google, or we use Brave Search, which is basically a privatized version of Google. But there was a time when people actually said, well, like, you know, I use a lot of search. I use Lycos and AltaVista and Dogpile, if a Hotbot. And there were all these people who were going to own the search space. And Google, at the very beginning, wasn't even really thought of as a thing. It wasn't one of the first. But then it became the dominant player. Are we doing that again with AI? Will there really be 12 big, giant AI companies that everybody uses a lot? Because this is the thing about this, though. You can build a search engine fairly easily, and while the data center requirements are pretty high, they are nothing compared to AI. So it's pretty easy to be a little piddly ant third-tier search engine. It doesn't require that many resources. You can even basically steal what other people are doing for your search engine. But when you run AI and somebody says, how many moons does Jupiter have? There's a lot of GPU spinach going on to give that answer in a way that looks like AI does it. So if it happened in search, don't you think it's going to happen in AI too? Don't you think we'll get down to one or two dominant players in the end? Interesting, isn't it? And then I have five areas that I think AI development could really advance that are not tied to who wins, because you could build your own custom agents to do this, and you could sell these as products. And I think there's more ideas than the five that I just randomly came up with in my head today. I think that if I throw this out there, maybe it'll kickstart some ideas. And right now it's pretty easy to make very simplistic custom agents using ChatGPT. But long term, I could see somebody grabbing onto this and developing something really powerful with it to serve a specific sector that the big giant dogs never will do as well as could be done if it was tailored to it. With all that in mind, let's go ahead and get into it. Let me remind you, though, real quick before we start, hey, please consider buying my book. Some of you guys saw me tweaking out. You know what would chill me out? If I sold a bunch of books today. If you enjoy the theatrics of the first round, that if you're watching this later, maybe you didn't see it, maybe you can find it on my channel, I don't know, and you want to like contribute to the Jack Not Go Crazy Fund, let me see a big number in book sales today. That'll help a lot. Laws of Life, Ditch the System and Design Your Life. This book I poured my heart, soul, and guts into. There were some problems with it anyway. I think we've gotten those problems ironed out for most people that will be receiving a copy anyway. But consider picking up a copy if you haven't already done so, if nothing else, to help Jack keep his brain intact. So now, real quick, let me remind you about what happens when I get back. So my first day back from vacation will be September the 8th. 9 a.m. September the 8th, we'll be sending an email to all the people pre-registered for the ChatGPT course. And it will once again be a race, right? Some people know who that, what that movie that's from. It's a race. I am winning, right? But you're not winning unless you're there. We're taking 100 people for round two of the AI course. And when we take those 100 people, we close it again. And we won't run another one until probably end of year, though I probably won't run one until January. I don't know. Tom and I'll have to talk. Because if we run one starting after the workshop, it's going to run through the holidays. So I don't know if we should do that or not. And then Sean's asking a question about the AI course. He says, if we are signed up, sign the form the first time, are we automatically in the next email? Yes, you will be. Yeah, we didn't purge that list. All we did was take the 100 students who got in off of it is what we did. So, yeah, you're good to go with that. In fact, Tom should probably, I'm sure you're out there laughing at me, Tom, having my tweak out today, send an email or two in the next couple of weeks to everybody on that list and remind them that 9 a.m. September the 8th, that sign-up link is on the way. All right, so we also have the workshop coming up, and the sale of the workshop will be the Saturday, the, I don't know, 13th, 14th, whatever the hell it is, that Saturday. Let me look it up. I am really kind of flailing around, ain't I? Saturday, September 6th is when the workshop will go on sale, and that usually sells out really fast, and you definitely want to get on the Telegram channel minimum, because that's how I put out the link for people. And with that, I want to tell you a few of the people who will be presenting this year and the topics they're going to be presenting on. And again, some of these people you know well, and some of these people might be new to you. So day one, we're doing, Andy McCann is doing a presentation called You Are the Primary Prep. Nicole Sauce will be doing a presentation called Build Abundance, Not Burnout, which I could use that right now, couldn't I? I'm a little burned out. And then Nick Ferguson will be doing a presentation called An Introduction to Homestead Design. And then we have a presentation by some of you are going to know this name, and you're going to realize what a big deal it is that he's coming. Alan Booker. But Alan's going to be, you know, most people in this audience know Alan. You probably know from his work with like genetic research into developing land race plants and stuff like that. Alan's like me, man. He's a polymath. In fact, I say he's what I aspire to become. He's a beyond my level of polymath. You know, the guy's a professional engineer. He's going to do a presentation called Economics and Exponential Growth on the first day. This is going to go into the economic problems we have and how there's no real way out of it, just a very painful unwinding. And then we'll be doing a home food production panel that at the end of that day. That will be Nick Ferguson, myself, and Alan Booker on that panel. That's probably worth coming to the workshop for. Then there's the food, the people, and two more days. So why don't we tell you what's going to happen on the other 2 days? Joel Riles, not doing dogs, though. His presentation is called Stop Complaining and Keep Going. Then we will have me. I'll be doing a presentation called Growing Mushrooms with Your Garbage, How to Turn Your Garbage into High-Quality Food. Then we will have Alan again. Alan Booker will be doing a show called Creating Buildings That Work with Nature. Alan is one of the best like alternative building tech guys I've ever met. Some of the stuff he dropped when we were at Nicole's this spring was amazing, but I'm having him do a whole presentation on nothing but that type of thing, which is right in his wheelhouse. And that presentation is probably worth the cost of the workshop. After Alan that day, though, Sonny Pazikas will be there, and his presentation is called Dependence Versus Ownership, You Can't Buy Competence. If you don't know who Sonny Pazikas is, look it up. That last name, Puzikas, Sonny Pazikas. He's a contemporary of Valery Azanov, who we have, like, sort of, kind of, named the TSP logo after Val, right? Valery Azanov. Building a passive housing panel that night. Chris Campones will be on that panel. Many of you have met him, little dude, really cool architect. He's been at a lot of workshops. He'll be sitting on that panel alongside Alan Booker, and I will probably run that panel as the panel moderator. Then we're going to have the next day, Farm to Forest presentation by Roy Ramey, retired lieutenant colonel from the United States Army. Who also is a big-time homesteader up in West Virginia and a really cool dude. Jesse Markowich will be doing a presentation on how to set up and run and use Start9 servers, if you've heard us talk about that, but, like, what does it really do? He's going to show you in real time. Patrick Rohrman, knives, right? Well, he said his presentation, The Edge You Want, starts today, but it's about your edge, not a knife's edge, but using that analogy. And Patrick knows a little bit about building resilience. That should be really, really fun. And then John Pugliano will be doing a presentation called How to Read the News from the angle of a financial investment manager right? How to actually understand what it means about your money. And then we will end with playing it safe on taxes is the real danger with Matt Sersley. And every day also has a nice built-in period of about an hour and a half between the last presentation and dinner for work-in presentations. Is something you want to talk about? We put up a whiteboard. You just put up what you're going to talk about, where you're going to be. And people just coalesce around that. Or you can go take your shower, go fish, do whatever you want. This is going to be awesome. And this is just an inkling of what's coming. There'll be more coming next week when I next week when I get back about all the other stuff going on, the menu and everything else. Some really cool stuff this year. All right. Now, with that, let's talk about this thing. Now, let's see if freaking StreamYard cannot cause me grief. I had problems last week where I tried to play videos for you guys and you couldn't hear the audio. People told me that other streamers had that problem. I think StreamYard's fixed it. I'm going to bring something up on the screen right now for you. This is that power system I was talking about. It's known as ExoWatt. And that bugs me a little bit because I just feel like an Innotech. You know what I'm talking about? Innotech, right? I feel a little Innotech in the name, right? This generic sounding name. But ExoWatt, this actually looks pretty cool. I'm going to hit play for you guys. You let me know if you can hear it. If you can't, I'll just explain it to you.
This is ExoWatt, a revolutionary modular system that produces energy from the sun, stores it, and feeds it back to the grid. But it does this without solar panels or lithium-ion batteries. Instead, it uses old-school tech like Stirling engines for energy production, Fresnel lenses for light gathering, and blocks to store energy as heat. It is a fascinating technology, and it might just make sense for the future of sustainable energy. So how does it work, and does it live up to the claims? Let's figure this out together. I'm Ricky, and this is Tuba DaVinci. This video is brought to you by Odoo. So what exactly is ExoWatt building? Their flagship product, the P3, which stands for three products in one, is a wild combination of technologies. First, you have Fresnel lenses, an invention from the 1800s, first used to help guide ships in lighthouses. These lenses track the sun and focus its light with incredible intensity. That focused sunlight is then converted into heat and stored in a second component, a thermal battery. These are basically hot bricks, solid blocks of clay and ceramic materials heated to a blistering 1,000 degrees Celsius or 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit, stored in an insulated container. Finally, to convert that heat into electricity, they're using a 200-year-old Scottish invention, the Stirling engine. A blower drives hot air through the hot bricks, and that superheated air powers the Stirling engine, which generates electricity on demand. All of this, the collector, the battery, and the engine, is packed into a bright orange 40-foot shipping container. Each container delivers about 25 kilowatts of power, but because they're modular, you can just keep adding more to meet your power need. Their claim? They can deliver power 24/7 for just 4 cents per kilowatt hour, with a future target of just 1 cent. We're talking less than half of what solar PV costs today without battery storage.
What we do is we literally ship these out of the factory on the back of a semi truck. They arrive on site and you put it on the ground. Again, as engineers, you want to build the biggest thing that looks very efficient on paper. You forget about construction costs. You forget about shipping costs. You forget about, like, imagine I build this huge turbine. Do you know how difficult it is to, like, transport a turbine? I'm sure you've seen, like, and that's what we're optimizing for. And I think we've done that to a great degree, and we need to continue to do that to ultimately bring down the cost of the system to a point that our levelized cost of electricity is 1 cent a kilowatt hour or even lower.
Now, to understand why a company like ExoWatt even exists, we need to talk about AI's dirty secret. It's a massive appetite for energy. The models powering services like ChatGPT are doubling in size every few months, and data centers are struggling to keep up. We've covered solutions like Soluna, which can help with energy demand for training these models. But the real consumption comes from the billions of queries that you and I are making each and every day. A single ChatGPT prompt can use 10 times more energy than a simple Google search. And that consumption grows with every follow-up question, as that AI has to remember the entire conversation. Combined, services like ChatGPT, Gemini, and Claude are now consuming as much electricity.
All right. I did use that opportunity to go grab myself a freaking beer. If we're going to do the last day, let's do it right. Prost, everybody. Okay, so let's talk about what this product is and what it does and why it matters. And again, I'm not saying this will actually do everything it says it will do, but the physics makes sense to me. This type of technology is new but not new. The idea that you can take something like a Frenzel lens and create a thermal battery with it, in fact, a very efficient, very high temperature thermal battery, is not new. It's been done and it does work. If you can create 1,000 degrees of thermal battery, you can easily push a generator with hot air. There's no doubt about that. And you can certainly store it. You know, if you're in a climate where you're getting, let's say, 10 to 12 hours of sunlight, you can certainly then get through 12 to 14 hours of darkness with power still coming out of this. And you can always, I got to do something real quick and close the door here. Freaking dog has learned to open the door, including the knob. Anyway, you can certainly get through that darkness period. And if you're not quite there with, like, you thought 10 of these would do it and you're a big company, then you can just add another, you know, order another one and plug it in. These things are just modular. They just, again, they daisy chain together and you can create as much energy with this as you can. I did check out the numbers, and the numbers do make sense. Nothing that they're claiming they can do is so outlandish that it's, you know, it's what was the chick that supposedly was going to diagnose all your diseases with one drop of blood, the one they put on the cover of Time, and it was all vaporware and completely fake, and there was no way to do it. Like, it's not that. Is it as good as they say? I did not have the time this weekend to dig deep enough into it to form an engineering level opinion of it all. But on the surface, this should work, right? And when things should work, then they probably will. And even if they work at, let's say, 90% of the claimed efficiency, it's still really good. So now you're just a little bit more expensive than solar panels on the power generation side, but you've zeroed out the batteries. And if you've priced a solar system like for your home, the panels cost less than the batteries. And the panels keep getting driven down in price. And this is very close to the cost of PV panels today. And it's about the same as the cost of PV panels maybe 2 years ago. And it's one manufacturer and no economy of scale really behind it yet. So there's no doubt they can keep this in line close to PV generation costs, but including storage. How does this fit into our future? To me, I don't know that it fits in that big on a large scale, which is clearly what they want to go after. They want to go after the people putting an AI database in, data center in, things like that. Well, do they have deliveries? Yeah, they do, actually. They're sure there's a fee for it, but you tell them where you want it, and they bring it in with a crane on the back of a truck, take a crane, and drop it where you want it. It is no different from a logistics standpoint to having shipping containers delivered. You know, every semi-truck on the planet is capable of delivering one to any place that truck can go to. So if you want one on the top of a mountain, now you're talking about sling loading with a Chinook or something, and that's different. But if a vehicle can drive to a place, if a tractor trailer could drive to a place, then this can be delivered to that place. So I think that this might, with all of the talk of like independent communities, let's not even call them designed or managed or libertarian or whatever, can be hippie compounds, whatever, just that there are more and more people who are trying to develop more and more independence for their neighborhood. Let's even call it that. This actually has a real potential for that, because you're not talking about kilowatts here. We're talking about megawatts of power. Each one of those trailers can put out about 25 megawatts. Now, the initial calculations, if you watch that whole video, and there'll be a link in the notes, were that this would take up an ungodly amount of land to do. Like a very large scale install, it would take up like hundreds of acres. The reality is it takes up less land than in a competitive photovoltaic system, also needing a very large facility managed for batteries. And I don't know if you know much about battery power, but if you put in a PV system like this to run like a small town or something, the the place that houses the batteries requires a significant portion of the power that it's then monitoring and redirecting back to you just for climate control for the batteries. Batteries don't want to be too cold or too hot, right? So this is actually really freaking cool if it works the way they say it does. And the cost, it seems to, again, it seems to be prohibitive to the individual. I don't think you're going to hear, you know, somebody coming on like your favorite YouTube homesteader, like a Curtis Stone or something. We just had it sling loaded in up here on the homestead and now we're completely off grid. No, I don't really think it's for that. This is more for, you know, your small neighborhoods and up and different projects like that, power cooperatives, et cetera. And also it could be very useful as adjunctive power for alternative energy adjacent Bitcoin mining. So one of the real strengths of Bitcoin mining is that they can put their stuff right next to like flare gas or windmills or whatever and buy all the surplus power. And then when the grid needs power, they can basically shut down until the grid comes back online. But with this type of technology, they could probably be selling power back to the grid the entire time and then running at least some portion of their miners. And maybe then, like, if you are a miner using that facility, because most mining facilities are not, like, all the equipment belongs to the mining company. Most mining facilities, like, it's people like me that own three miners at their facility. And so I pay a fee for that, and then I get my Bitcoin rewards and have to figure out if I made or lost money that year or whatever. They might charge slightly more if you were in the queue to stay online when everybody else went offline, depending on how often that was. Just a thought. There's a lot of ways I think that can work. It says, Texas Plant Company says, seems like they can scale down for homes. I don't know about that. You know, can you throw one in a 20-foot trailer that would run a, you know, a household and do more than it needs? I don't really know. And would it be cost effective? Because this is what you have to understand. When they say that they're very close to the cost of photovoltaics, they're basing that on a certain amount of scale, right? They're building a one-off, like, that's how you can do this. Every single one of them is identical. Every single thing, every piece, every part, once you've designed it, it's all the same. So now you can factory manufacture and assemble, and, you know, there's only so many parts. Like, all of those thermal bricks and everything are probably modular themselves, and they just in. So this is an interesting and hopefully scalable solution. But what I want to do now is keep going so that we don't spend too much time on it. I just wanted to make you guys aware of it. So I want to talk to you about Cracker Barrel. And maybe a little different than you've been hearing it. So what I've seen a lot on social media, and this seems to come mostly from people who have never been to a Cracker Barrel or never went there for the purpose that most people that are regular customers of Cracker Barrel go to for. So you might be the person that you're on the road and you need breakfast and you know they have biscuits and gravy and there's a sign and you pull over, you go in, you eat and you leave and you really couldn't give two shits if you're at Cracker Barrel or Denny's, right? Those people and people that have never been, or I will also say that even though there are chains and the whole purpose of a chain is for the experience to be the same, it's not. For instance, we have another chain here in Texas and elsewhere called Texas Roadhouse. It's a steakhouse, kind of blue-collar steakhouse. Freaking delicious. Freaking amazing. Let me tell you, we ate at two different ones of them in Tennessee, which I thought would still be good, at least here in the South. They sucked. They were dog shit in quality. I mean, they really were. Like, the meat quality wasn't there. It just, the service was okay. The atmosphere was okay. But it wasn't the same. So I also would imagine there are places where there are Cracker Barrels where the quality's not quite what it's expected to be, even at today's degraded quality from, let's say, 10 years ago. But the reason you go to Cracker Barrel is because it's nostalgic. That's why you go. You walk in, there's all kinds of cool shit on the wall, and instead of it being like metallic signs made in China that are replicas of something from 50 years ago, it's the thing from 50 or 60 or 70 or 100 or 120 years ago. It was the real thing in most stores. And there might have been a little bit of modern replica blended in, but most of the stuff was indeed antique, right? Maybe not super expensive, but antique. Additionally, the store that's kind of in the waiting area in the front of the store, this old country store, you know, it had a lot of knick-knack Chinese made crap in it too, but it also had like, you know, older music on CD available. A lot of nostalgic type toys and things that would have been real common 30, 40, 50 years ago in any American's home. And then the big thing that they have in the stores that kind of is that harken back is candy. The old candy. Like penny candy, candy that you'd be familiar with if you were a kid in the 70s, stuff like that. So the cool thing about this, if you're a grandpa like my gray-bearded ass, is you take your grandchildren there and you take their phones and you get rid of their phones. You don't get your phone. We're going to Cracker Barrel. And you talk about all this stuff. That's the point. Now, the point until recently was also the food was really damn good. Like, their biscuits and gravy were the bomb. They really were. They were as good as grandma's. And that was the other thing. It felt like going to Sunday dinner after church at grandma's house, which is not the thing that it used to be. But, guys, this used to be a big deal. Sunday dinner or Sunday supper, depending on where you were from, what you called it, because it was always right around, you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, was a sacrament in this country in a lot of places. Everybody went to grandma's, and grandma basically did the work of Thanksgiving every freaking weekend for Sunday dinner. Yeah, my grandmother's, it would have been, you know, not Cracker Barrel things, but the experience was the same. You know, we had things like city chicken and halloukis and stuffed peppers and roast beef and stuff like that, where, you know, other places it might be fried chicken and white gravy or something like that, right? And everybody went, and it has that feel. And no matter kind of how you grew up, unless you're a Yuki like me, you know, you're not going to get galumkis at freaking Cracker Barrel. You probably could get something kind of dialed into what you would have had at your grandma's. And then you can have that discussion with your kids. And when you walked into the place, you know, there's a big fireplace. The lighting was a little bit dim. Not dark, not dank, just dim. Not, boom, bright-ass highlight fluorescent light. Well, what's been going on with Cracker Barrel isn't about the fucking logo, okay? No, it's about the interior. The logo is just an expression of what they've done. And what they did is rip all the charm and all the heritage and everything I just said the fuck out of it. Now, they haven't done it to all the locations yet, but it's coming. This is the plan. This is the 40-something woke-ass white affluent bitch who's probably never eaten a friggin' biscuit and gravy in her life, her plan to save the company, whose stock price magically started tanking 3 years ago, the day they friggin' hired her. Everything this woman has touched has gone to shit, because that's what happens with woke. Woke goes to shit. Always. Everything woke goes broke, and she's doing the same thing again. But her idea is, the reason people don't want, we want to attract a younger crowd, a hip crowd. Hip, young crowds don't go to fucking Cracker Barrel. And they're never going to go to it. They don't go to restaurants like Cracker Barrel. They don't go out to breakfast to have home-style breakfast. Like, we kept the food the same. Yeah, that's part of the problem, you idiot. Your food quality has gone down. Put the quality back where it was 10 years ago and past. Up the portion size a little bit. If to do that, you have to raise prices, we'll fucking pay it if you put our shit back the way it was, okay? Charge a little bit more. We understand inflation. We pay it everywhere else. We'll pay it when we go out to eat. Put it back the way that it was. I don't know. I think it's too late. People are pissed because you're messing with something. It's a lot bigger of a deal than what's his nuts that has nuts that's supposed to be a woman being on a Bud Light can. You know, the people that drank Bud Light, and this is not a Bud Light, by the way, you know what's in here, right? You guys know what's in here. Anyway, the people that drank Bud Light just said, fuck it, I'll drink Coors Light or Miller Light. That's what the bartender always asks. Say, what do you got on tap? Bud Light, Coors Light, Miller Light. They can't even say all the other shit unless they say those three first, right? Because it's so ingrained. So they just drank a different beer, and they drank Bud Light because it's what they liked. They didn't have, like, this cultural attachment. And if I think about Cracker Barrel, like the first time I went to Cracker Barrel, I was probably, I'm going to say 20. It's probably right after I moved to Texas, because we didn't really have them where I grew up in Pennsylvania. So That's 33 years. Oh, God, that sucks. That's 33 freaking years of history with this place. And watching for 33 years that history not change. When I went in, it looked like it did when I went in it 30 years ago. And I could rely on that, and I could take my son at one point and then my grandchildren there. And I had hoped maybe if I'm lucky and I don't kill myself by then, maybe one day I take a great grandkid there when they're old enough to even understand what I'm saying. And if not, my son's a grandfather. He could take his kids there. That's what Cracker Barrel is to people. I know that's, if you don't have that relationship with the brand, you don't understand what I'm saying. And that's okay. You just have to trust me. Why would I lie about this? This is now, why did the hailstorm coincide with changing the logo? Because what the logo change did was show the intent of what's been going on behind the scenes that most people didn't know about. Most of the stores have not been upgraded yet. What does the new Cracker Barrel look like? The walls are bright white. That helps the old people that go there because they can't see. Could you be a little more ageist? I thought you liberals were freaking, you know, sensitive to shit like that, okay? You know what people don't want? I've hated restaurants like this my whole life. There was a restaurant in Arlington, Texas, when we lived down there, that I wanted to like it, and I just couldn't eat in the place for this same reason. Not the nostalgia shit and all. Just you went in, you sat at a table, and you felt like everybody's looking at you. You felt like you're in a cafeteria in high school. Bright, fluorescent lights beating down, super bright everywhere. Nobody wants that when they're in a social situation surrounded by strangers. When you have that subdued light, think, I don't know, what's a chain restaurant that does this well? Olive Garden. Olive Garden has the right lighting, even if their food's not great, right? Light, bring the light down so that when I'm sitting at my table with my people, I feel like I'm in my own little space, even though somebody's right over there. Super bright lights, white walls so that reflects everything. They took down all the nostalgia and they replaced it with imitation Chinese-made crap because Bimbo with her glasses thinks it would be great if you could just spec it out. Whenever you build one, they all get the same shit. They sterilized it. They sanitized it. And then the logo redo, if you haven't seen it yet, it's gone from kind of this cool logo. It's a Cracker Barrel with a kind of wavy thing. And then it had an old dude leaning on a barrel. He must be the cracker because it's racist. That's what liberals think because they're stupid. A Cracker Barrel, again, this is old-timey stuff, right? Crackers used to be in a barrel. You didn't buy them in a box. Potato chips used to be this way too, guys. You go to a little store, and it had a big barrel full of crackers, and if you wanted to buy crackers, they would take a certain amount out of the barrel for you, and people used to stand around the Cracker Barrel and talk in the old hardware store. And the old dude leaning on it, Uncle Herschel, he was a real person. He was the dude. He was the uncle of the guy that started the store, that started the whole damn thing. This is a real story of a real family that started a real company in America, hiring American people, doing things the American way, and built a success, and they're erasing that. Don't tell me it's not intentional. Don't tell me that glasses bimbo bitch doesn't know exactly what she's doing and isn't doing it for the exact reason you would think she's doing it. She doesn't want it to exist. She doesn't want it to exist. She wants it all to go away, and this is my thing about the whole thing. This is for all companies of any size, but big enough to have a legitimate CEO. Because like somebody, I'm a CEO of a company. How many people are in it? Me? I mean, technically, I'm the CEO of TSP. I don't say that because it sounds stupid, right? You don't have people working for you. You're not a CEO. But any company big enough to have a CEO, you should never hire a fucking CEO that doesn't love your fucking product. If the person you hire is not a customer of your business, they should not be your CEO or any C-level officer whatsoever. Because how can they understand enhancing a customer experience if they don't love your product? Now, I guess if you're making sugar water syrup shit like Pepsi, maybe you can get away with it. But wait, you know what this reminds me of? See, I'm old. Look at the beard, right? I'm old as shit, right? This is my Santa beard for those that don't know. Ask in the live chat if you're confused by that. But I remember New Coke. And it didn't last very long, did it? I was part of that Gen X group of kids that were on the news dumping 2-liter bottles of New Coke in the ditch because we hated it so much. That level of miscalculation, and add woke to it, and affluent white woman syndrome, and, you know, there you go. That's what this is. So if you, I just wanted to cover, if you've been wondering why people are pissed, now you know. It isn't anything to do with what most of what's being said on social media or on TV set. It's people that actually loved something the way that it was. And you've not just changed it, because nobody likes change like that when they love something. You've destroyed it. You've ruined it. You cut the heart out of it. You might as well just change the name, declare the brand extinct, and create a brand new chain. Because that's what you're doing. And I don't think it's going to last. I think this woman is going to get thrown out of that company, and I hope her golden parachute's big because she's going to need it. Because I don't think anybody's going to want her after this one. That said, maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong. Jack was wrong. Why? I could be wrong because this shouldn't happen right now. If you're a brand, like a big brand, like Cracker Barrel, you know, like a big brand, if you have a public company that has stock that trades like on the S&P or whatever, you know, NASDAQ, or if you have a public company that trades across the major stock exchanges, and you're going woke in 2025, what the hell is wrong with you? It's not about me hating woke. It's about, we've seen this move. I've seen this episode, right? We know what's going to happen, and you're doing it anyway. So who knows? Somebody, she ruined Taco Bell. I mean, how do you fuck up Taco Bell? Ask this bitch, because she did it. I'm not a Taco Bell customer anymore. I stopped doing that like when I got my first job making like 3x minimum wage, I stopped being a Taco Bell customer. But my understanding is that she ruined Taco Bell. She took away some of the most loved products from Taco Bell. And then her next job is this. So we take Taco Bell Destroyer and we put her in charge of Cracker Barrel. We take Cheeto Lady and put her in charge of the Secret Service. Gee, I wonder why our country's heading in the wrong track. On heading in the wrong track. Orange Man did something fascist. Legit fascist. I'm not even kidding. I have been more lenient on Trump than I think most people in my space because I didn't expect that much from him. Full fascism? Now, to understand what I'm saying, you have to get Nazi out of your head. Fascism, Nazi, not the same thing. The Nazis were fascists, right? All Nazis were fascists, but not all fascists were Nazis. If you look at how Spain was run under Franco, for instance, fascist as it gets, not Nazi. Okay, Nazism is national socialism. Fascism is also kind of nationalist socialism, but it doesn't necessarily mean people are going to gas chambers and being rounded up and going into detention facilities and all the way they try to make out the Trump's doing, as if taking someone who's in your country illegally and holding them in a cage until you send them home, or by the way, they could leave anytime they wanted to if they would just go the hell home and stop fighting being deported, that is not a Nazi death camp, right? That's not attacking black and brown people or all this other crap. No, they don't seem to have a problem with what he just did, though. He got $2 billion share in Intel, 10% stake in the company. Now, he says, I didn't pay nothing for it. No, because he didn't pay anything for it. You and I did. About $2 billion, which is about what it's worth. Plus, they got an ass load of money, like something like $11 billion, more than the value of their company as part of the CHIPS Act, right? They got a big chunk of that, too. But he's negotiated a deal. The United States now has a 10% stake in Intel. That's fascist. And it's something I've said many times. The country we live in is fascist. It's been fascist. Germany lost World War II, but fascism won. Fascism has never been defeated because we never even tried. We co-opted it. We are probably more fascist than they are in anyway. And what I mean by that is fascism is when you have this unholy alliance between the private sector and the public sector. Like, you know, Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. That would be a perfect example of a fascist system. Semi-private, public-private partnerships. That's fascism. Where you have a situation where classic textbook definition of fascism, industry and the state work together, leverage the difference between the classes, economic and social both, to further the goals of industry and the state, seeing themselves as mediators. We had classic fascism, the government tells industry what to do, and then we have neo-fascism. People throw the word neo around all the time and don't know what it means. Neo means new. So neoliberal is new liberal, neocon, neoconservative is new conservative, neo-fascist is new fascism, right? Which is about 70 years old. Check your calendar when World War II ended, blah, 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 okay? Right, so we have neo-fascism. And all that means is we just flip the hands. Instead of the government telling industry what to do, the industry tells government what to do. That's our system. And this is not the first time the government has taken a stake in a major company. And it's wrong. And I can't defend a bit of it. I can't come up with any way to say, you know, give Trump a little bit more space on this. Like no, I can't. However, I can actually think of a way this could be done. There'd have to be some real guidelines to keep people from profiteering off the back of it when we need, as a nation, to bail somebody out. Whether you want to hear this or not, there are companies and industry sectors that losing the key players in them is a national security issue. And Intel would qualify for that. Maybe not as much as some others, but things like the ability to like your airlines, right? You can't have a country like the United States with like major airlines going out of business and then not having the ability to, like, pharmaceutical would be another one. Like, for all the hell I give the pharmaceutical companies, things like antibiotics are really kind of important, you know? And there are companies that you can see this with. Take what Trump did and put it away. Don't consider it at all in what I'm about to say, because you won't be able to think if you conflate the two. This just made me think of this. We often have this thing where, like, well, we'll loan the money and they'll pay it back. But will they? Nobody ever pays the money back. The only time I know that we bailed out somebody who actually paid the money back was the 1980s when we bailed out Chrysler. And Lee Iacocca brought a check to the White House. And Reagan was like, what? What do you mean? Nobody pays the money. Nobody expected you to actually, like, Iacocca tried to make a big deal. Like, look what we did. We kept our word. And he wanted to bring in like a big old Ed McMahon check, right? Like, Chrysler pays back. They didn't even want the money. That's the only time I know where they really did pay it back. What if we did this in the future? Any company big enough for this is publicly traded. What if whenever they received a bailout, the government took the stake? Now, I know you're going to hate this next word, but it could be done in a way where it was managed and automated, right? Where the government took a stake, like a 10 or 15% stake in the company, held it for a time, and then was forced at some point to sell the stock after recovery back into the market. Now, this is not risk-free, because what if the company dies anyway? Okay, then we lose. But the way the system works now, we lose anyway. So what if it would be like we take the 10% stake in Intel, because people are telling you they didn't need this money. They weren't on the edge of bankruptcy. They were. SoftBank saved their ass a couple weeks ago, and I covered that. SoftBank bought a 10% stake. Why did SoftBank do it? We're not exactly sure yet. Somebody commented on the blog saying it has to do with this glass substrate that Intel's making, and all the chip makers are going to use their glass. And so SoftBank wanted to get ahead of it. That's not what I mean. I mean, why was SoftBank so eager to buy it? Because they saw it as a value. Because the stock price was so depressed. When a company's publicly traded, there's no real protection from somebody else with a lot of money just going, I think I'd like to own that. I think I'd like to control that. I think I want to buy 51% of the stock. Or even if they buy like 40, if you own 40% of the stock in a company, you have a lot of say. You have a lot of sway. And you can keep accumulating it until you have control of the company, right? Hostile takeover. So where's SoftBank from? Just refresh my memory. Japan. You know who has tons of U.S. dollars that loves to buy American equities with our money that we give them for their crap? China. So when you get certain companies like Intel And they're in that, maybe they're not going to go bankrupt, but they are in a vulnerable state because their stock price is so depressed. Foreign entities can pick them up. And even if you say, we can make a law against that, first of all, no, we won't. And second of all, it won't matter. It'll be an American subsidiary of that government's company, right? You know they'll do this anyway. So there's points where we don't want somebody to go under, and there's also points where we don't want them to be taken out, right? We don't want them to be taken over, co-opted, or even just bought and then shut down, or bought and moved out of the country, bought and then all of their IPR is visible to the people who bought them. So there could be a model that would go something like, in this scenario, the United States government takes their printed ass money, their stolen money, and they buy X shares of the company, X percent of the company. And then when the company gets this far restored, they start selling the shares. And there's a drop-dead point at which the shares have to be liquidated. There is a danger in this, though. And that is there has to be a control valve on the back sale, selling back to the public. Because if they take that big of a chunk and then they go, just sell it at over the counter, right? Just sell it all. Oops. We crashed. Let's get right back to where we were. You know, if you dump 20% of a company's shares overnight, that's actually a technique of hostile takeover as well. You slowly accumulate the stock to not drive it up, and then you rapidly divest of it, drive the price down, and buy it back while everybody's panicking. That's another technique that's used by hostile traders all the time. So there would have to be a flow control mechanism, and I don't trust government to do it. It doesn't mean it couldn't be done. And you can't tell me it's not preferable to just write them a check and handing and say, oh, it's really a loan that we're never going to get back. Because when you hold the equity, you hold the equity. And there are companies that we do not want their IPR and their infrastructure in the hands of China or Russia or India or a consortium of foreign governments. And again, I don't care what law you pass, it doesn't mean that it can't happen. It still can happen because that's how stock markets work. And as long as it's a publicly traded stock, one way or another, these countries can set up companies that are subsidiaries of companies that are subsidiaries of companies. And in the end, China, Beijing controls, you know, like one of the largest technology manufacturers in the United States. Not a good thing. All right, moving on. Let's talk about, I wanted to just say one thing about this, and that is who likes it. You notice the Democrats have been awful quiet about this, maybe a little rumble here or there. It's Bernie Sanders favors the plan to take a stake in Intel and other chip makers. He said, my friends, I'm once again asking for your support so I can get reelected and grift some more. But he also thinks it's a great idea because since we give them these grants, that we should get a stake in the return. In other words, if we're investing in them by giving them money, then the people who made the investment, which is not him, it's us, should get something back. I agree with the sentiment, Bernie. Again, I don't really trust government to do it well. But when you have Bernie Sanders agreeing with Trump, you know you're probably outside the box a little bit. Next up is Trump's executive order on the flag burning thing. So the way this is being covered is orange man bad, orange man fill out paper. Paper says you burn flag, you go to jail for at least 1 year. I actually thought maybe that's what he did because he's done some really stupid shit lately. But I also was like, self, wait a minute here. Hold on. He learned a lot in his first term, and he even learned a lot in the first couple of months of this term about writing EOs that are completely indefensible in front of a court. This is completely indefensible in front of a court, which probably means that it doesn't say what the TV said it says, which is usually a good bet anyway. So I dug into it. The EO is actually directing two separate things to happen. One is to DOJ. We'll shelve that one for a second. We'll come back to it. The other is to Congress. It's aimed at directing his executive branch to work with Congress to try to pass a law to, in fact, do what it looks like it says, but not quite. Okay? It's more about using existing laws that make it, let's say, an aggravating or mandatory prosecution with a 1 year minimum if it includes flag burning. So, like, it's not illegal for me in many places, for instance, to carry lockpicks. Okay? I can carry a lockpick. No problem. And I can use it if I'm, you know, getting into my own place. I'm in an emergency, legitimate emergency situation. Or if I happen to be good at lock sport and you basically want to hire me as a locksmith for free and say, hey, man, get me in, because the locksmith has to be licensed or whatever. But if it's your door and you locked yourself out, I can come over and pick your lock. Cop will watch me and go, good job, man. Glad to see you get in there. No problem, right? But if I have the lock pick and I'm committing a crime that the lock picks are not related to, there are jurisdictions where that adds on to my problems, right? I can be prosecuted at a higher level because I was in possession of them while committing a crime. That's kind of what he's doing here, that generally speaking, if you have a protest going on and you make a big pile of garbage in the street and light it on fire, you've committed a crime. It's often ignored. We have bigger fish to fry, or they just want to have fiery but mostly peaceful protests. But in general, if you right now, wherever the you know, kind of anything bigger than a small town especially, you just go down into town and throw a bunch of cardboard in the middle of the street and set it on fire, stand there and look at it, there's probably a guy in a uniform going to come take you to, you know, you're going to have a free night stay at the local hotel that has bars in front of it, right? That's going to happen. So this kind of is angled toward when that happens and involves a flag, use that existing law and be as aggressive as possible under it. And he wants Congress to codify at a higher level because you are not. And he also would like to see Congress just say it's illegal in of itself, but that's on Congress. Neither of those things are going to happen in Congress. Of all the shit these people have to do, maybe it gets a line item in a giant, the second big beautiful bill or something, but in general, they're not going to do this. This does not benefit them, and it's not worth the political capital to the people that even would want it. The Supreme Court has ruled on this. You cannot take someone and put them in jail for burning the American flag. And then there's your right tards instead of your left tards out there. You can go to jail for burning an LGBTQ plus IA, whatever the hell it is, flag. No, you can't. Well, I got this article right here. Look, these people got prosecuted because they damaged a mural on a street, and that's public property. I've always said this. I think you are a detestable scum if you burn the American flag. That's my personal opinion. It's not a crime, though. And I think you're an agitator and you're an asshole and you're trying to enrage people. I don't think you actually are making any kind of legitimate political statement at all by doing this that benefits the cause in any way. It's just to agitate. So I think you're a dick. But it's also legal, and it should be because it's freedom of speech. If you can't burn the flag that you own or someone else who legally owned it gave you, then we don't live in America. We don't live in anything approaching the ideals of America. As far as we've fallen, we better be able to do at least that, or it doesn't mean anything. I had an Army drill sergeant that talked to us about that. We're on the run-up to the Gulf War. We had protesters outside the camp. We're all on a bus going to range for the day, and they're out there, and they burned a flag. And they're, I mean, this is recruits, right? This is 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old kids willing to sign their life away. Like, that bus almost tipped over from anger of people wanting to get out. He said, sit the fuck down, man. I'm going to tell you something you don't want to hear. If you go to war, you're going for those people, not the ones that cheer you on. If they can't do that, what you do in that uniform that you want to wear for your career doesn't matter anymore. And he explained it to us from a standpoint of, you took an oath when you joined to defend the Constitution. That includes freedom of speech, including the shit you and I disagree with. I think they're a bunch of knuckleheads. I go there and whoop their ass myself, but I know better. I want you to know better, too. If we don't have that, the flag doesn't mean anything if it can't be burned. However, let's say that the protesters take over a park and there's a great big beautiful flag flying in the breeze that belongs to the city, and they take that flag down and burn it. Oh, fry their ass with everything you have. It's destruction of public property. See how simple that is? So what he's trying to do is kind of sit in the middle of that space with this. But what this is really for is, come on, dogs, over here. Pay attention to this. Don't ask about Epstein no more. Right? Oh, you forget about Epstein? Yeah, it's that shit. This is just another, hey, look over here. Now, there's a lot of reasons you might want people looking elsewhere, like what's going on in Ukraine. We'll get to that in a minute. Let's first talk about the ghost of Margaret Thatcher. the ghost of Margaret Thatcher. I didn't think I was going to use that terminology when I started today's show, but Margaret Thatcher one time quipped very famously in the 80s. This would be during the Reagan years. The problem with socialism is you always run out of other people's money. And I just, as I was saying that, realized that the Reagan years set the time where there's probably people listening to this who don't know who the hell Margaret Thatcher was. She was a prime minister of the United Kingdom in the 80s. She was known as the Iron Lady. And she was pretty cool as politicians go, especially British ones. And that was one of her statements. Well, the new German chancellor, right, has come out and said the German welfare state can no longer be financed. The German welfare state can no longer be financed. German Chancellor Friedrich Merz has called the reform of Germany's social welfare spending while ruling out tax increases on medium-sized companies. The comments made at a state party level conference in his Christian Democratic Union in Lower Saxony on Saturday will likely be seen as paving the way for future contention with his government coalition partners, the Socialist Democrats. Basically, what he's just said is when we look at the numbers, we don't have enough money. We don't have enough money anymore. We're out of money to do this. It can't be done. It cannot continue. It's over. We have to put an end to it. And yeah, he would be the conservative party of Germany. They've had a swing. But let me just tell you that the a person that is a conservative in Germany right now is left of a liberal in the United States in the year 2000. Significantly so. They're not as left as our lunatics that we have now, but you know, they would be left of 1990s Bill Clinton, to put it that way. And Bill wasn't as bad as I think some people make him out to be, despite his other problems. As a president from an economic standpoint, I wouldn't have given him an A, but you know, he got a better grade than, you know, Biden or Obama from me, I would say. But yeah, he's not like some uber right wing, he's not a Trump person, right? He's just looking at the money. He's just looking at the money. We don't have it, and there's a limit to how much more we can borrow, and this whole Ponzi scheme's starting to fall apart, and the United States is not taking our shit anymore, and they're not willing to pay all our bills anymore. So, and let me tell you what kind of welfare state Germany is. You can't fail. They cover everything. Housing, healthcare, unemployment, 100% across the board. You almost don't live any worse without a job than with a job in Germany right now. Almost. Not quite, but almost. Assuming that you worked at all, right? Once you're in that system, once you started working, you kind of have like the work cred, like you lost your job because the company downsized stuff. You don't end up having to like downsize your house, right? Or sell your car and buy a used one, like, it's almost 100% made whole for a time. So when you're in that situation, how much incentive is there? I mean, we have plenty of people riding that here in the United States right now, welfare queens and such, and they do live worse than the person with a job, with a good job anyway, right? Imagine if you could live like you were upper middle class without working and get away with it for years. And you could just hold out for a management position until you found something you really wanted to do. I mean, even if you did go back to work eventually, wouldn't you be like, yeah, this wouldn't be so bad for a year. You know, if that happens once every 5 years, you know, like a little mini interim retirement is so nice. And I'm telling you, I've talked to people from countries, from Germany and countries like Germany. They literally look at it that way. And even the people that have never experienced it, kind of like, I'll let them have their time off. It's no big deal. We got plenty of money. Turns out you didn't have plenty of money. You had our money. This is something that's not being said in the news right now. They had our money to a large degree. You know, Orange Man making them pay their fair share in NATO, that's where a lot of that fucking money came from. So, but in the end, sooner or later, whether it's another country's money or your wealthier citizens' money, you run out of other people's money. And maybe we should learn from that experience and stop experimenting with something that constantly fails. What it makes me think of is the political cartoon. And there's this guy, and he's got a giant fork, and the fork says socialism, and it's a giant you know, electrical outlet, and he's shoving the fork in the electrical outlet, and his buddy is watching him. He says, everybody that did that got hurt. And he said, everybody else did it wrong. That seems how we're taking the approach of socialism. And in the United States, it seems how companies are taking the position of wokeism. Well, yeah, the last 14 companies, these giant global brands that did this, you know, they lost hundreds of million dollars in stock price. They decimated their customers. They had to come back. They never fully came back. It's this is totally, they all did it wrong. I'll get my big old giant white woman glasses on and I'll do it right with Cracker Barrel, right? Okay, sure. Now, on to other bad ideas. This little twat right here, the fact that we ever got in bed with this guy, for those that aren't watching the video, this is Vladimir Zelensky. This guy is a pile of freaking human filth. He really is. As I covered with you guys last week, a data breach happened with the Ministry of Defense for Ukraine recently, and it's legit, and it's been confirmed legit. The Ukraine has lost 1.7 million plus men in a three-year conflict. As I said on Thursday last week, that would be equivalent to the United States losing about 14.5 million men. And if you go down to the age that is the primary demographic, let's say 20 to 40 is the majority of men lost are in those fighting age males, about a little more than half. So whenever you look around and you see a young male in America, you see two of them that are 20 to 40 years of age, roughly, one of them's not there anymore. And then of the ones left, roughly 30% of them are permanently disabled for the rest of their life in some way. Emotionally, physically, you know, some in a wheelchair, some just missing a leg and they can get around with a prosthesis. But about 30% of the people that aren't dead, right? So 30% of 50% are seriously injured for the rest of their lives and going to need some level of disability payments for the rest of their life. Nobody even thinks about that. So Trump calls Vladimir Putin in like a freaking schoolboy into Alaska, flies a bunch of aircraft over his head, does the intimidation thing, pulls him into the close orange man handshake, negotiates with him and says, look, man, you need this to end. We need this to end. Ukrainians need this to end. And here's some ideas for how it could end. And Putin looks at it and goes, that's actually reasonable. Yeah. Let's change a few things, but like 90% of this we're okay with. He goes to Ukraine and says, hey, we've got a half side of the deal worked out. And you know what Zelensky says to it? No. Not no to some things. No to everything. Zelensky, this is out over the weekend. This idiot said, Donetsk, Luhansk, Crimea, all this is Ukraine. One day we will be together again as one family. And went on to basically say, we're not giving up anything to the Russians, including Crimea, to get a peace deal. Whoa, 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 you little bitch. Crimea went before you were even elected. Years before you were elected, you little bitch. You little naked piano playing with your dick pervert that was installed by the Soros Foundation. That chip is like nobody with any brains at all. Like anybody that's like, yeah, they got to get Crimea back in this war too. Like if you're saying that, your IQ is so stupid, you should have your right to speak to other humans taken away. You have to go in a little room with other people as stupid as you. You can all talk to each other all you want, but you're not allowed to even touch anything else in the world. You're not allowed to turn on a fucking light switch without adult supervision if you believe that. That's how dumb you are, because that's so gone. That's so past. That's like saying, like, oh, you know, yeah, we're going to give Texas to Mexico, right? Like, get the fuck out of here. Like, this is just retarded. It's absolutely retarded. It's not going to happen. But this lines up with what I've said about this man. He'd rather see the last Ukrainian man dead than lose power. He can't win, and he knows he can't win, and he does not think he can win. Lynn says, Zelensky thinks he can win if money keeps flowing. He does not believe that for a minute. He knows he can't win. He doesn't care. What he thinks is maybe he can grift this shit on for another 5 years or more, until he enriches himself as much as possible before he eventually has to run away. Because I'm telling you right now, the people of Ukraine, by and large, want this man gone. And more them want him gone in, let's say, some creative ways that it might involve something like a steel strand and a lamppost, right? I'm just saying, like, this is where we're at. The most recent polls in Ukraine, this is Ukrainian opinion, people that actually live there. Not you, Karen, who lives in Minneapolis, who enjoyed the smell of anger during the Floyd riots or some shit like that. The people that fucking live there and suffer with this, that are seeing their kids die, they want this war over. 69%. 69% in the last poll. We don't give a shit what has to be done, end the war. Give us our lives back. And again, what is Putin proposed? Putin has said, you want peacekeepers? Fuck it. Go ahead. We don't care. We have no designs on the whole country anyway, so we don't care. We're not coming back. We want this over as much as anybody. Probably more than most, because it's actually hurting us and it's enriching you pricks. So, yeah, that's fine. Go ahead and put whoever the fuck you want in there to defend it. Like, if you don't think we could turn it into a glass factory if we wanted to, fine. Believe whatever you want. Go ahead and do it. No NATO. Trump's on board with that. No NATO for Ukraine. And then we keep these two provinces that started all this shit, and we get the two little pieces, and we will give you 2/3 of the territory we currently occupy back. I haven't heard anybody on the news put it that way yet. Go look it up. Go look at the map. Again, Russia has this huge swath, this huge crescent of land from northwest, from northeast Ukraine up by Poland, all the way down to the Crimean Peninsula. Huge, massive piece of land. They'll give 2/3 of it back as part of the peace negotiation. They should give it all back and just go home. That's not how war works. Show me a war where one nation invaded another nation, took that level of land. And we're not talking about guerrilla warfare here, guys. You know what Russia's not dealing with? Russia's not dealing with the equivalent, like the Ukrainian equivalent of the Viet Cong, like we did in Vietnam. So I'm talking country on country, head-to-head warfare, conventional warfare going on, right? It's drones and all, it's guerrilla. No, this is what modern convention, catch up, this is now what conventional warfare looks like. So conventional warfare, one country marches well into another country, takes the territory they said they wanted, and a shitload more. Has a military advantage in every way, is winning every military conflict, and says, yeah, we want the war to end too, and the other country just says, we'll take all your stuff and leave, and they said, okay. This has never happened. It never will happen. You have to be, again, your IQ has to be at such a level that you should be in a little room with all the other low IQ people. You're not allowed to affect the world. You need adult supervision to use a fork, right? Your forks have to have corks on them. Right, you need adult supervision and a permission slip to turn a light switch if you believe that is even possible, let alone probable. It just won't happen. Why would a nation like Russia come in with such overwhelming military superiority, take the land, and then just give it back and say, whoops, we're sorry? You have to be out of your mind. And for this idiot to take that stance means I'm not giving. Now, here's my hope. Like I said, one of the reasons I don't get so mad at Trump is I don't have very high expectations. He put a lot of political capital into this. He got everybody, including the Euro Karens and the Euro Tards, singing from the same sheet of music on this. And then Zelensky's like holding his breath like a child in the 80s while his mom's telling him to eat his dinner or kids are going to starve in Africa, right? And whatever happened to that? Does anybody say that anymore? I don't think anybody says that anymore. You remember when you were a kid, if you're older, right? You remember when you were a kid, you didn't want to eat something? Your mom's like, yeah, there's children starving in Africa that would love to have that. I remember I always just say right before I got freaking smacked for it, right? Well, then let's pack it up and send it to them. Like, that seemed perfectly logical to me, right? But like, that's what he reminds me of, like this stubborn little bastard kid that just won't accept reality, but he knows reality. And he has no chance. And John Dukes calls him the cocaine dwarf. I'm stealing that, bro. I'm stealing the cocaine dwarf. He is the cocaine dwarf. This is all our fault, but the only way we can fix it is stop touching it. If I have a huge potential to believe that Orange Man is going to make a phone call soon that's going to go something like, remember when I said I'd cut you off? yeah, I can still do that. And I'm getting real close. I'm getting real close. If you want an exit plan, because you're going to need one, and you want us to be part of it, you might want to start playing ball right now. Because Orange Man really has kind of his dick in the beehive at this point, right? Like, he did it to himself, but he's not the kind of guy that kind of accepts it when that happens, right? He's the kind of guy that he wants to actually to win in the end, right? And I think that there's some real pressure about to come Mr. Zelensky's way. And then I'm not going to rule out this potential either. We'll hear the tragic news that somebody in the Ukrainian government was a traitor and killed him, or, you know, somebody took him out in some way. And of course, we'll have nothing. The CIA and the NSA and the United States government denies all knowledge of anything, like just like we did with Nord Stream, right? Like, yeah, remember that, right? Like, if see, this war has a demarcation point. I can forgive everybody that disagreed with me in the beginning about what actually caused it. And believe the TV set and everything else up to one point, Nord Stream. When the Nord Stream pipeline was destroyed, and your government and the Ukrainian government told you with a straight face Russia did it, Russia, who had the other end of the pipeline, Russia who built the pipeline, Russia who paid for the pipeline, Russia who, if they didn't want gas to flow through the pipeline, just like shut it off. That's all they had to do. Blew it up on the bottom of the freaking North Sea. Okay, the day that happened, your opinion, if you stayed on that side of it, became invalid to me. I don't care anymore. I don't even try to convince you. You're just an idiot. The fact that you believe that, I don't even care if you've eventually accepted that it wasn't true, but now you're like willing to give them a pass? No, no. Liberty, I don't have time today, man. I got to wrap up here soon. I got shit to pack and stuff like that. A Liberty Garden says, when you're done with Ukraine, what do you think the actions Trump is taking against Maduro? He hasn't actually done anything yet, so I don't know. We'll see. I'm opposed to invading Venezuela. I think that's a bad idea. I don't know what he's playing at. I don't know if this is kind of like getting your opponent's face and knowing he won't take a swing and making him understand if you don't give in some places that I am going to take a swing, but you're not really going to take a swing, like a bully move. Because I just don't see, like, United States Marines storming the beaches of Venezuela. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. And, when I get back, maybe we'll know more, or maybe we'll find out I was wrong about that. But let's move on. Let's talk about AI a little bit here. I want to talk about AI from a standpoint that I really haven't heard anybody talk about yet. Right now, we have something that we didn't have during the search wars. Mega companies building product. So when the search wars happened, and what I'm talking about is, like, we had Yahoo. And they had a directory, and then they had a search engine. Eventually, we had Google. They were kind of the two big dogs. But then we had Microsoft, who had, like, a naming crisis. It was Bing. It was MSN Search. It was whatever it was. But you had the Microsoft search engine. Like, those were your three big players. But there were also, like, and some of these companies ended up with a lot of money pumped into them by investors, right? Because nobody knew yet who was going to win. Lycos, Hotbot, Ask Jeeves ran a commercial at the Super Bowl. That's not exactly inexpensive. Dogpile was like this aggregate search engine that brought all the search engines together to try to improve the results, and AltaVista. And, you know, back then I was deeply involved in web marketing, and we were literally optimizing for all the search engines. Like, there were different things they liked, and we actually cared. Like, if you don't do this thing, AltaVista probably won't list you. And then all of a sudden we were optimizing for, like, Yahoo, Google, and MSN. And by, like, 2005, 2006, like, fuck it, we'll just optimize for Google. And if we get some traffic from the others, fine. We don't really care. And if they had gotten so similar that if we do well in Google, we're gonna dominate the other two anyway. And today, if you say search and Google, they're synonymous, like Xerox and copy, right? Like, they just – to Google, it means to search for it. And that was an interesting battle, because even though there was some big money behind it, it wasn't like the only company in that fray that had a big company behind them before Surge was Microsoft. And they did the worst. Right? They did the worst. And part of it, I think, was because they didn't really market it well. They relied on their browser integration, which people really quick figured out how to avoid. They didn't make really a great product. And by the time they actually ended up with a pretty good product eventually, but by then they had already lost. Today's different. All of these companies are fueled by massive amounts of money. ChatGPT largely is fueled by Microsoft, just in case you didn't know, as far as the economics of it. Of course, Gemini, Google, the wealthiest companies in the world. So they're building a product. They're not building a company. Meta, Facebook, again, one of the most powerful companies and most financially well-off companies in the world, right? And if you look at just about all of the AIs that are out there that are really competing in the marketplace for customers on a real level, they're all like that. But in the end, how many can really be the dominant player? Probably one. I'd say in this space, you might have kind of one that is more geared toward the geeky type, you know, the coder, hacker type person that wants to build stuff, and one that's more like a lifestyle one for everybody else. And they probably both will do some of the other, but maybe you have those two differentiators. But you're not going to have a valid business model for AI to be big and have 8 companies that are big. You're not. And the reason is it's way harder than search from a financial side. Not just from a technology side. And what I mean by that is when you run a search, you're basically just querying a database. And it's actually pretty flat the way that it works. There's an algorithm that drives where you're listed in that database. But does it even matter who's on page 2 of Google? Like when somebody's doing deep research, that's an interesting term, Gemini. But they're doing like a deep, or that's GPT, right? Deep think, right? Like when you're trying to find like 100 companies or something, maybe you care what it says on page 3 of Google. That doesn't even matter. All your algorithm's all geared around 10 listings and associated advertising. That's it. And it doesn't actually take that much from a resource standpoint per query. Per query. That's the important thing. Yes, there's a lot of infrastructure to store that much data so that when I go there and go Dallas Cowboy tickets for sale in Dallas, because right? I want to go to a retail like a Tom Thumb and buy them, right? There's not that much that goes into going, here's some listings. When you say, ask ChatGPT, even though it's answered this question 100 times today, how do I change the air filter in a 2004 Toyota Corolla? It doesn't just give you a YouTube video like Google does. It actually thinks so that it can communicate with you and give you that experience of AI. And that involves GPUs, right? Go zzz, and that's electricity. And it's significantly more energy use. Now, think about how all of these companies have freemiums. You can just use it, right? And they can't dumb it down too much because then you'll have a bad experience and you'll never pay for more. Because really, they don't really limit what it'll do. They limit how much it will do for you, how many tokens it remembers, right? And it will. You actually get to a point on many of them will say, you've used all your free shit for today. And even when you have a paid account, you get to a point where it says, you've used all your shit for today, and you can upgrade. But the performance can only go down so much before it's not enough of a freemium to make you buy the premium. I don't see these companies being able to maintain that for much longer. And, you know, 5 years is you know, relatively short term, even in the tech space. So I think you've got about 5 years before you're going to see the dominant players fully emerge. And some of these companies are going to quietly just go away. Oh, that can't happen. They're too big. Ah, Google. Remember Google Plus? What? What's Google Plus? It was like Google's version of Facebook. Died. They couldn't pull off a social media platform. Google could. Right? Yahoo tried to compete with Google for video, bought one of the most amazing companies ever built, broadcast.com, and totally fucked the whole pooch sideways 3 times from Sunday. Right? Like, so big companies can fail at these things. And I think that'll happen. Now, but what are the opportunities for specific AI development? In other words, developing a product for people. And I tried to go like all over the map with this, right? Instead of just take one idea and repackage it to different groups, because that's what people will do. But here'd be one thing. Like, I've been using AI for editing my new book. And it cannot be trusted. It has to be done basically page by page. You tell me what you think's wrong, and I make the decision whether to fix it or not. I can't say, here's my manuscript, act as a proofreader, fix run-on sentences, punctuation, spelling, etc., and don't change anything and trust it. I cannot trust it, one, to find all the errors, but two, not to change things I don't want it to change. What if you built an AI for writers and authors, dedicated as an editor, like Edit GPT, right? You know, or chat edit, edit chat or something like that. And it had different modes. And one would be like discussion mode. Discussion mode would act more like a conventional editor. But usually the way a conventional editor, they mark all your shit up and send it back to you, and then you accept certain changes and decline certain. What if you had an editor that like you just threw your manuscript in there and it's like, okay, page 9, paragraph 2, you said this, it should probably be restated at this, accept or decline. And then you could go in and individually, like, I'll change it, but this way, and it just would do that. And at the end, it would just spit out your manuscript back to you edited. And you would only have the changes you approved. Another option would be fix-it mode. And fix-it mode would be exactly what it sounds like. Here, just fix it. But don't rewrite it. Don't change what I said. When I made a run-on sentence, it should be 3 sentences. Turn it into 3 sentences, but stay true to type. The way a good editor edits for an author who does not want, you know, the kind of editing you're going to get if you go with a big publishing house. Where they say, yeah, you want us to rep you, then you're going to do what we say. So it wants control. They don't want their voice changed. And you could have one that also is like full-on New York Times editing service. Like if you were, you know, signed with Simon and Schuster and they gave you an editor, what would that editor do? And you'd have different modes of this. I think that's a huge market. And it's actually a really easy niche product to develop, but I don't know that it can be developed on any of the current platforms because whenever I've tried to customize or crit it, it still fucking does things I don't want it to, and I have to manually use it. And the way I mean by manually use it is I literally cut a page from my document, drop it in and say, tell me what's wrong with it, review it, and make the changes I want to make outside the AI. This is stupid. It's also the case, like many of these AIs, if you say, make me a document out of this, the document that made it is shit, right? Make me a document formatted exactly like the document I gave you. They can't do that. Gemini won't even give you a fucking document. If you use DeepThink, what it'll do is it'll make a document that it exports to Google Docs, but it won't give you like a Word document. You have to do that yourself. There's a lot to run with there. Just a thought. How about a personal productivity and workflow management tool? Think of it as like Outlook or whatever you use to manage your life on steroids. And I'm sure those companies will integrate AI, and maybe Microsoft will revive Outlook so it's not just old fucks like me that use it, right, to where it will become this productivity suite that they've always wanted it to be. But I see this as being a much better tool if you actually had like the GPT, Gemini, Claude, Grok experience where it got to know you and it could communicate directly with you through like text messages and stuff like that. And it would catch up. Liberty says it's called Copilot. Yeah, and I don't use it. I know I have it on my 360 suite, right? I don't use it. It sucks from what I can see. To have more of it be completely autonomous and by itself. Right. So that it's not integrated into your email program. I don't want GPT writing my emails for me. I really don't. Or I can do that if I want to, but I have it over here by itself. I think there's a lot of opportunity there. And I think that opportunity is only going to grow. And the reason I think that it will only grow is as much as people like to say shit like my boss is an asshole or, you know, a boss is like a diaper, always on your ass and full of shit. People actually, if you have a good boss, is really beneficial. It's really beneficial to have somebody above you overseeing what you're doing and kind of reminding you of things and telling you what needs to be done and keeping you on a deadline and holding you accountable and saying, hey, what's our progress at? Like, because see, Outlook doesn't do that, does it? Like, it has progress tracker. It's all on you, right? It doesn't actually kind of hold you to your progress. Well, we have more and more people working remotely and solo, and that's only going to grow in the future. So having think of it as a customizable boss and a customizable PA at the same time. I think that whoever develops that has a home run, and it does not have to be a massive AI company thing. It would be just for that. And as far as like, well, I need a list of the top 100 companies in this niche, they could use an API interface with one of the other big companies for that. In fact, the whole thing would probably be built with API interfaces and actually being run off somebody else's engine or multiple engines. But I think that's a good opportunity. How about e-commerce and retail support? And I don't mean when you go to, you know, joeblowswidgets.com and little chat thing sits there, it looks like it's a person that works for the company. Oh, I see that you're on our website on page XYZ. Do you have any questions about these blue widgets? Or would you like to see our green widgets? I don't mean that. I don't even mean coming from the company. I mean, for you, the buyer, an AI that would be an agent that ran on your machine or that you were running as like software as a service, right? So it's on somebody else's machine, but you're using it through its interface. And when you're looking for something, it helps you find it. It helps you verify it. It helps you vet it, right? It's everything that FakeSpot claims to be but isn't for Amazon. It's more sophisticated than just reading reviews. It finds the competitive products. It even finds companies that might be willing to, like, maybe you're not buying a ballpoint pen. Maybe you're buying 4 pallets of solar panels. Maybe it actually finds 10 of the best suppliers that have panels that meet your spec and negotiates on your behalf. Sends an email to all of them, and then these are the ones that came back, and then it like starts bouncing and figuring numbers out and figuring out like what the bottom price should be that you should be paying and what terms you might be able to get, like delivery over time instead of all at once or whatever it is that you're looking for, and it acts as your buyer's agent. I think that actually AI has all the capabilities of doing that today. They're just not assembled properly, and it can't be trusted to do it. That's something I think could be developed relatively quickly. How about customized learning guidance? In other words, true teacher. One of the best uses of AI right now is developing your own learning program. But what if you had an AI developed for that? That was its purpose, including things like interviewing you to help pull out of you what it is you really need to learn. Starting out with what you want, but also what are your goals? Think about that, right? Like when you go to learn right now and you go to college and you're like, well, what do you want to do? Well, I want to be a mechanical engineer. I want to be a teacher in a university situation. I want to be a teacher of an elementary school. I want to be, you know, whatever it is you want to be. I want to be a game programmer, right? There'll be some degree path at most universities that will be kind of like, this is the closest thing we have to what you want to accomplish. And with this degree, you are well suited, even if it's a lie, to go out and apply for jobs and build a career in this space, right? But no, it's not. Let's be honest. No, it's not. If you look at a person's typical 4-year experience in college, probably 70% of what they learn has no relevance whatsoever on their professional life. And there's probably things that could have been used in that time that are more suited to getting them where they are. And not only did the school not know what those are, they did a student. I mean, have you guys went to college? Because I didn't, right? All I have is like high school guidance counselors and military recruiters as my experience level. But I don't remember, or I've never heard of anybody talking about somebody deeply interviewing me or you to determine the exact learning framework that we need to accomplish our goals. And those goals could be professional or they could be personal. It could be recreational. And imagine an AI developed to not just develop the coursework for you and the project work for you and to send you in the right direction, but to find it in the first place. not only finding the resources available for you to research and study and learn from, but to figure out what you should be learning in the first place. Or you flip that one around for someone like me that's a teacher, and how much better a job could I do as your instructor with a tool like that? Instead of making a personal profile, this is what Jack Spirico wants. I'm Jack Spirico. I'm the instructor. This is what I know. This is what my students are telling me they want to learn. Let's build a better educational paradigm for my students. And then how much of that can I automate so I can teach more people faster? And how much of that can I eventually turn over to them and put them on a self-directed path so they can get off therapy? As we used to call it, as a marketing consultant. I used to tell all my clients when we were in marketing consulting, I don't want to actually work with you for the rest of our lives. I maybe in some capacity, maybe we're here to review, maybe we're on a retainer for a couple grand a month. Maybe you send stuff over, we look at it, we give you additional ideas, but I don't want to take $20,000 a month for you for the rest. And they're just, what? No, our job is to empower you. Now, if you have things you need us to do, we'll do them, but I don't want you to need us. I want us to always be your gravy. I want us always to be your icing. Like, and that's just a different approach. This would be a tool for doing things like that. And then how about alternative and future facing history explorer? So I want you to think about right now alternative history sci-fi. A perfect example of this would be the series Man in the High Castle. For those who've never seen it, Man in the High Castle is a alternative historical version of World War II. United States lost. Germany wins, and by proxy, then Japan wins, and they decide to take over North America. And when they take North America over, they realize, like, hey, we don't want to go to war with each other. So basically, Japan takes the Western United States, and Germany takes the Eastern United States. And for the purpose of the storyline, there's like this thread in the Rocky Mountains in the middle that's like a neutral zone that's like free world, right? But they don't have any of the resources that come with being protectorate of the Nazis or the Japanese. And it goes, and then there's like a time travel component in it. I burned out on it. I thought the first season was fascinating. I think I watched the second and I kind of fizzled by the end of it because they started this weird, like characters going through time and seeing that it wasn't supposed to be that way. But it was interesting. But that's for the purpose of sci-fi. What if it was really for the purpose of studying, learning, and extrapolating from history? So here's an example of how this might be used. If you ask most people, if you could go back in time to, let's say, 1925, and you had a couple weeks to work with, and you're not allowed to enrich yourself, you can't go bury gold under a brick somewhere or something like that. You have to do something meaningful. What would you do? There's a shitload of people that would snap right to, I'd go find Hitler and shoot his fucking ass. And I wouldn't even care about getting arrested because apparently at the end of the week, I'm just going to like be beamed back to the future. So woohoo, everything's great. And when you look at that on the surface, you're like, well, you know, getting rid of Hitler can't be bad. Really? Hold on. Let's think about that for a second. What happened? Absolutely horrible. Not mitigating in any way. This is not Hitler was really the good guy or something. Don't go there. Just think about it this way. Why did Hitler become Chancellor of Germany? Just because he was very charismatic and had a little mustache? Or was there a deep seething underlying anger in the German people for what was done to them at the Treaty of Versailles? And the answer is the second one for the slow kids in the back of the room and on the short bus. That's why a Hitler was able to take over. Translation, it is likely the case that somebody that would do things like Hitler did, even if they weren't necessarily exterminating the Jews, but put Germany back on a wartime footing, go back to regain what it had, probably would have happened. And they weren't exactly getting along with their neighbors at the time. Okay? Right? We really did cause World War II with World War I. And the way it was handled at the end, when I say we, I mean the collective allies, France, Britain, the United States primarily. And we did that anyway. So unless you were going to prevent that from happening, you're probably going to get the setup for World War II and just Hitler's not part of it, somebody else is. Would it be one of Hitler's other cronies like Himmler? Because I remember in Man in the High Castle, like even the people in the Nazi party that were like, yeah, you know, Hitler didn't exactly, like, he's kind of crazy now. It's like 10 years after the war and type of shit. But man, when he dies, Himmler's going to take over. It's going to be much worse, right? Or it could have been somebody lost to history you never knew. If it had taken 5 more years for World War II to have started, based on where Germany was from a technological standpoint, it is almost impossible that they not only would have had the atomic bomb, they would have had it to the exclusion of every other nation in the world, a monopoly on it, and no reason not to use it, because the only reason we stopped using it is because other people had it too. We didn't use it because we felt bad, right? That's 2020 talking. It was a horrible thing. The general sentiment at the end of World War II can be summed up in my grandmother's words in the 1980s, 40 years later. That's what the Japs thought, so they got the atomic bomb up their ass. I'm not defending it. That's just how my grandmother felt, and she was a very loving person. If she felt that way, I'm sure others felt a lot more along those lines. So now imagine you have a fictitious person, we'll call him Hans, and Hans takes over Germany in 1942, and Hans is this close when he takes over Germany to having the atomic bomb, and by the time he decides, like, France doesn't need to be France anymore, he has it. Now what happens? Interesting little dilemma, isn't that? Now the other thing is then this can be then swapped around and say, based on the context of history and the alternatives of similar situations, history rhyming but not repeating, in this situation, in these three instances, what are three probable futures if these three different paths are chosen? I think that would be really cool too. And it would be good for academic study. It would be good for writers, like sci-fi writers and shit, because even though that's not what it is, it can be definitely used for that. It would be good to better understand the history that did happen by looking at the alternate possible courses had it not gone down the way that it did. So those are five areas. Again, editing systems for writers, personal productivity and workflow management, e-commerce and retail support on the buyer's side as an active agent, customized learning guidance, a true teacher, and an alternative and future-facing history explorer. I think this will all be cool. And you know what? None of them are that hard to build. Now, I don't mean I can build them. I mean people that can work with this technology, what we already have, already do a lot of this. It's just not buckled down. Hey, I can't be trusted with a lot of this. There's a lot of things in this that there has to be like these hard limits. And what I actually think is users should have control. I don't want you to do this. I do want you to do this. Maybe I want it to do something that you don't want it to do, and you want it to do something I don't want it to do. We should have that flexibility. That's what's going to make the difference, because in the end, when it comes down to just information, they're all going to be the same. There is a point at which you're going to get almost the same answer from everybody, and it's either going to be right or it's going to be within its woke boundaries, because all these tech companies are going to be woke. You're going to have to give people something. Texas Grappler is asking me a question. What is your experience with AI so far? I mean, the main ones, GPT, Gemini. I know you've been trying them out for different purposes. My experience has been great, except there's things I can't trust them with. That's why I have a whole course on how to use GPT. My experience has been, and I was talking to Alan because I was setting Alan Booker up to be at the workshop this weekend. We finalized that deal between us, and we ended up just talking about other shit. Alan and I get along, like we're like long lost brothers. And we started talking about AI, and I found out something that I was really actually humbled by. Alan Booker took our ChatGPT course. I guess he was really quiet, or he used a screen name. I don't know what, that we didn't identify him in the chat. But he took the whole course all the way through. And he said he learned a great deal from it. And he really didn't have a lot of experience with AI. And he's not exactly a fan, because you can see some of the negatives that can come from it. But after taking the course, and I think this is a good answer to the question, that's why I'm going into this, he said, what I've realized now is AI is absolutely invaluable for the person who is informed about what they're using it to do. The speed that it moves you along, the ability to craft prompts, like it is amazing. And I think it's inherently dangerous for the person that doesn't know anything, that doesn't have the bullshit detector. It's like, wait a minute, that doesn't seem right. Because they will become convinced of fictitious information because it came from AI. And I think that would be my experience. That would be the best. Like, I'm like, again, Alan and I, we just, I don't know, we're the two kind of people we just immediately clicked. And I think it's because we're both like super geeks. He may look a little more super geeky than me. I don't know. Maybe I look geeky. I don't know. Maybe we'll have different opinions of ourselves. But he really works a lot with like Gen Z young guys and helping them learn about permaculture and design and engineering. And very much a man who wants to give back. He's only a few years older than me. But like one of his Gen Z students that I met up in Tennessee was like, he said the clothes he wears, I call it his uniform. He's like every old guy. And I'm not saying he's old. I'm saying this is how, if you're 22, he's old, right? Every old guy dresses like this. And I'm like, I'm an old guy. I don't dress like that. But whatever. But anyway, Alan and I just really hit it off right from the very first time we met. He's a super good dude. And I was very humbled to hear that he thought enough of me to take my course and pay for it. I would have just given it to him. But anyway, guys, I think it is time to wrap up, and I will not see you tomorrow. I will be not gone yet, but I'll be close to gone. I will be getting all the rewinds done for you guys so you have something while I'm gone. If you did see the first attempt at doing this with all the glitchiness in it and me snapping out, let me just say, I can do that anytime I want. I'm not on the verge of a breakdown. I was having a little bit of fun like that. But there was a little bit in me like, of course this is happening now. But I was hamming it up. We're all good. I'm going to have a blast with my wife. I have heard from a few people. Once I heard we're doing Alaska cruise, like, are you going out to Seattle? Because I live in Seattle. We could do a meet. No. I want to be very clear about when I go on vacation with my wife. There will never be a time I'm like, hey, we're going to XYZ. And we're going to be on vacation for 2 weeks, just me and my wife. And I'm inviting all of you to be part of it. It's not that I don't love you. I just love my wife and my life more. I do. And there's times when people need to get away. I'm not saying it'll never happen, but if it does, it will be pre-planned, right? It'll be like, why don't we do a thing here, and then we'll take a vacation, because we've done that. But my vacation, you're not invited. And it ain't because I don't care. It's because there's a lot of you, and there's only one of me, and my wife shares me with you all year long. And when this is going on, she doesn't share you with me anymore. It's just for us. It's husband and wife time. And that's what we're going to go to do. And some people have been at, like, I'm not meaning to sound like an ass or anything. I appreciate it, you know. And some have been asking, like, what we're going to do. We're taking a float plane out to an island to see bears. We're going to go whale watching. And the whale watching thing, we actually decided something really cool. These little ports on the Alaska cruise look really cool. And we don't want to be, like, gone all day and only have, like, an hour. We got to run and get back on the ship. So we're in Seattle for a couple days before we get on the big ship. So the one day that we're in Seattle, we're going to take a whale watching excursion out of Seattle. And that should be pretty cool, too. That'll get that done. And we're just going to have a blast, man. And then I see somebody saying, ho, ho, ho. So real quick, just for those that have been wondering about this, maybe haven't heard me talk about the beard, it's nowhere near where it will be. The goal is to grow it into a full Santa beard, you know, by about the workshop. And I think that the girl that cuts my hair, she and I decided, like, July is when we had to start it to get it there based on, you know, my haircut records for another pop culture reference. And it seems to be coming in, and I just went, and so she just recently trimmed it, and I was having the weird stick out the side thing and all going on, because, you know, I've never grown it this long. And so when you start growing length from no length, there is like that intermediate stage, kind of like chickens, like they're super cute, and then they look like dinosaurs, and then they look like chickens. And that intermediate stage, that's kind of where my beard was at. And I just went and had it done, and there was like one little curl sticking out. I'm like, can you shave this? She's like, trust me, leave it alone. I got this. Just trust the plan. And she pushed back on Dorothy because I told her Dorothy was starting a half second thought. She's like, just tell her to trust the plan. I got you. And I think she's doing a really, really good job with it. And we'll start to get, you know, more shape into it and whatnot. But that's what's going on with the beard. And I appreciate all of you guys. I appreciate all of you guys in the audience, because when she started to waffle and I told you, I got like about 20 of y'all instantly like, tell Dorothy no take backs and whatever. So I was able to use y'all's sentiment to sell her on continuing the project, which, by the way, was her idea in the first place. So anyway, Santa Jack is coming. We're going to have a great second or last half of the year, I guess I should say, final quarter of the year when I get back. We're kind of moving into that mode. We have the workshop coming up. That's going to be fun. I hope to see you guys there again. We're going to have great presenters like we always do. Great meals. I'll tell you about the meals next week or next week after I get back. You guys will have a week leading up there. But there just might be some new things on the menu. You know, I did get a really badass smoker this year. So with that, take care, guys. Maybe one of them. Are they gonna bail you out? Take care, guys. I'll catch you when I get back. Run you round.
They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way. Show you a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd. You don't have to live the way they tell you to. Make your own way, the others will follow. Revolution.